Smith versus Dominion Technical Solutions, Ms. Russo and Mr. Aylward, did I get that right?
Aylward, sir.
Aylward. All right, Ms. Russo, you wish to reserve, oh, I'm sorry.
Which side is the appellant?
Yeah, which side is the appellant? That's why I bring clerks, the appellant.
I am going to reserve time for rebuttal.
How much would you like to reserve?
4 minutes.
All right, you may begin when you wish.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. My name is Amber Russo, and I represent the appellant, Roger Smith, in today's appeal. At this time, as I already have, I respectfully request that 4 minutes of my time be reserved for rebuttal.
Okay.
We're here at our own request for oral argument to address the appellee's assignments of cross errors set forth in their brief. In response, we intend to prove the following to this honorable court. One, that Mr. Smith did in fact suffer a compensable injury by accident on March 8th, 2012. Two, that he did give timely notice to his employer under Virginia Code Section 65.2600. Three, that he proved ongoing total disability from January 29, 2013 ongoing. And four, that the commission did not err in not addressing the appellee's remaining defenses, which were failure to prove periods of disability and failure to market residual work capacity. There was a hearing, an evidentiary hearing in this case on July 31st, 2013. The deputy commissioner issued his opinion on September 16th, 2013, and he found, based off of consistent medical records and the witnesses, or the, I'm sorry, the appellant's credible demeanor, that he experienced an injury by accident on March 8th, 2012, that he did give timely notice, and also awarded an open period of temporary total disability beginning March 9, 2012, ongoing. The full commission affirmed the deputy commissioner's finding of an injury by accident and timely notice, but reversed and modified the ongoing temporary total disability award to an inclusive period from March 9, 2013 through March 8, 2012, through January 29, 2013, the last submitted medical record. Commissioner Marshall dissented. He agreed with the deputy commissioner concerning the open temporary total disability award, stating that the Unum long-term disability questionnaire on January 10, 2013 supported an open award of temporary total disability and was proximate in time to the January 29, 2013 medical exam. He relied on the cases of Lyon and Stouts. Our first point that we intend to prove is that Mr. Smith proved that he suffered a compensable injury by accident on March 8, 2012. The appellees contest this finding of the deputy commissioner that the full commission adopted. The commission found that given the consistent medical records and the claimant's credible demeanor, he proved an injury by accident on March 8, 2013, as described at the evidentiary hearing.
Credibility termination was premised squarely on demeanor, was it not?
Yes, Your Honor.
And what is the standard of review on that issue, credibility issue?
Well, for the full commission first, it's a finding of fact, and that is that type of credibility determination, as opposed to the substance of the testimony, is the hardest credibility determination to overrule. And essentially, they have to be plainly wrong in making that credibility determination. The deputy commissioner has to be. And on this court, it's a finding of fact, And this court has stated that issues of weight of the evidence and credibility are uniquely within the province of the commission, and the Court of Appeals generally does not substitute judgment for that of the trier of fact. And credibility, of course, of a witness is a finding of fact.
Particularly when it's based on demeanor.
Yes, yes.
Which is how you started your response.
Yes, Your Honor. The claimant or the appellant has to prove by a preponderance of the evidence injury by accident, which includes four elements. Mostly the opinions cite three, but in fact there are four. The first is an identifiable incident, and in this case, Mr. Smith has proved that he helped a co-worker on March 8, 2013, around 8:30 p.m., to unload and move an approximately 100-pound trunk from a work van to a warehouse of the employer in Fishersville, Virginia. It occurred at a reasonably definite time, March 8, 2012, at 8:30 p.m., and it occurred within minutes. The co-worker grabbed the handle of the large trunk and started walking forward, and the claimant's body twisted, causing low back pain.
I think one of the issues that seem to have generated more dispute among the parties is whether there's continuing disability after January 29. I know there's a notice question.
Oh, yes.
Because the parties, again, disagree on what notice, if any, was given. But I want to focus you on the issue of continuing disability after the 29th of January, because there is a medical record that I'd like both parties to address.
Mm-hmm.
It's Dr. Reed's last exam.
Right, on January 29th.
And in that exam, he notes that prognosis for improvement was very poor. Headed, I think he means the claimant, is headed for SSI permanent disability. And my question is, let's just take that much of it for the time being. Does that conform with what the case law requires with respect to what has to be noted to indicate permanent disability? Is it an estimate? I see this as an estimate. Mm-hmm. As to the possibility of permanent disability. And I think the Hoffman case seems to talk about it in terms of estimate as opposed to a definite prognosis or diagnosis. I'm curious about how you treat that. And I know the argument is this final medical report was not temporally, in terms of time, close enough to the hearing to be credited. I wonder if you can address those arguments for me, please.
Well, I can understand that the prognosis that was, it was January 10th, 2013.
10, and then he saw him again on the 29th?
Yes, Your Honor.
And didn't repeat any of that? That's...
Well, he repeated that he discussed disability issues and chronic back pain and continues with long-term disability, which was what the 10th. The 10th report was. But the prognosis in this case, you know, very poor, headed for Social Security permanent disability, I believe is a stronger, less vague statement than Hoffman v. Carter.
What about Lohr?
In Lohr, they expected him to get better, I believe. They expected him to improve. Yes, that is correct. That he had been on light duty before. And that he was put back on temporary total disability until he made progress, until his condition progressed. If you look at the medical records in the entirety in this case, what you see are consistent symptoms of low back pain, chronic pain management, and pain that just continues to get worse. In April, he had one herniated disc. We see in September, October, through EMGs and CT myelograms, that now he has two herniated discs that are impinging on his nerve root, that it's all being related to his incident. And
there seems to be a requirement that there be a medical opinion to the effect, well, to establish permanent disability.
Well,
and
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
And all that you're talking about came very early in the case and not close enough to the hearing is the argument.
This court just came out with a case September 30th, 2014. I might butcher the name, but it's Saddlemeyer. And in that case, the claimant appealed an issue where the commission denied an open temporary total disability award. And this court reversed that decision because the commission relied solely on the medical records to prove an inclusive period of temporary total disability and completely disregarded the claimant's testimony, regarding his current condition, regarding his symptoms. And, that's what we have in this case. When you look at the commission's opinion, you see that they simply cite to the medical records. They're not looking at the claimant's hearing testimony that he's saying his back hurts more now than it did a year before, that he still remains out of work, that no doctors ever released him back to work. And I realize that the deputy commissioner found found him credible in his demeanor for an injury by accident and notice, but I would assert that goes also to his other hearing, that is his other statements throughout the hearing.
Is that finding that there has not been proof of continuing disability, is that a factual finding by the commission?
Yes, it is.
So in order for us to disagree with that finding, we would basically have to say that as a matter of law, the evidence was such as to establish that there was continuing disability.
Yes, so long as this court can say as a matter of law that the claimant has sustained their burden of proof in showing temporary total disability beyond a certain date or periods of disability, then you can overrule and reverse the commission's decision.
It's always much easier to review a decision where a finder of fact finds that the burden has been carried, and then you can look at the quantum of proof and say, okay, we agree or disagree. But where you have a finder of fact concluding that the litigant has not met that burden of proof, it's much more difficult because you then have to determine, and oftentimes you can't, why the court rejected that proposition.
Well, I mean, that goes back to the case that just came out on September 30th, 2014, the Saddlemeyer case. There was no credible evidence in that case to support the finding of an inclusive period of temporary total disability, and your
no
honors.
Medical evidence, you mean? There was no medical evidence?
Yes, Your Honor. And in this case, I would assert that there is no medical evidence either that proves that temporary total disability ended on January 29, 2013. If 19 days prior...
Whose burden is it to establish the disability? Is it the burden of the employer to establish that the disability ceased? Or is it the burden of the claimant to establish the burden that the disability continues?
The latter, Your Honor.
So the fact that there's no medical evidence that to prove that he got better doesn't make much difference. You have to prove that he remains disabled.
I think we're moving into the realm, if I'm correct, into staleness. That January 29, 2013 report was too stale to prove temporary total disability, but
I wouldn't use the word stale. I'd use the word weight of the evidence. The weight of that report was not such that it allowed the commission to conclude that the condition noted in the report existed at the time of the hearing.
the weight of the evidence is the same. That medical record essentially states the same, if not worse, symptoms than all the other medical records that the commission found proved temporary total disability.
You are well into your rebuttal, and I've neglected to mention that to you. So if you wish to reserve, I'll give you a couple extra minutes as a result.
Okay, that's fine. Also...
Well, do you wish to reserve or go forward?
I'll reserve.
Okay. I'm sorry, I missed that.
That's fine.
I don't have my timing lights to rely on. I'm relying on my iPad.
Is there a little red light we can look at?
No, I actually have to read the countdown timer, which is much tougher for me.
May it please the court. My name is Art Aylward. I'm an attorney with Midkiff, Muncy & Ross. I'm representing Dominion Virginia Power in the Roger Smith matter. I'd first like to address the error that's been raised by the appellant in this matter, which you've discussed here. Deputy Commissioner and the full commission awarded medical benefits and disability to the claimant based on this alleged March 8, 2012 accident. On review, the full commission affirmed the injury by accident but found that the claimant was not entitled to TTD beyond January 29, 2013. The claimant had failed to prove any additional disability after that date as of the time of the hearing, which was July 31st, 2013.
Did this boil down to disputed conflict between medical evidence, and so a determination, a fact-finding was made as to which medical
There was no dispute, Your Honor. There is no medical evidence whatsoever after that last note of January 29, 2013. It's well settled that the commission, that a claimant must prove his periods of disability for the commission. There is no presumption that once you prove disability and it's established that it continues on for an indefinite period. In this case, the claimant presented no medical evidence beyond January 29, 2013.
Just to be sure, he was relying on the January 10 and 29 medical reports from his doctor, Dr. Reed, and his testimony, was he not?
Ron, I can't speak as to what they relied on. I understand, Your Honor.
The claimant
did not even submit that January 29th document into the record. It was actually submitted as part of our medical designation to show the completeness of the record. So to say that he was relying on it seems sort of far-fetched at this point.
Well, it was in the record.
He's now chosen to rely on it.
It's in the record.
It's in the record, yes, sir.
It is the last medical report.
That's correct.
The prior one on the 10th did talk about his being very, the prognosis was, quote, very poor, headed for Social Security disability. And that's where it ends. The 29th doesn't change that, right?
The January 10th, I don't believe he was even seen or examined. That I believe that was a disability slip that was prepared by Dr. Reed, who was his primary care physician.
But that was the medical report on January 10th.
And then he saw the Dr. Reed
on
again.
The 29th. Nothing has changed, but nothing is confirmed. Your point is the disability was not confirmed. There's nothing further beyond the 29th.
That's correct, okay. Your Honor.
But he did testify at the hearing, the claimant, right?
He testified that he had aches and pains, but okay. I mean, typically medical disability is not established by claimant's testimony, it's established by medical evidence.
And so the bottom line is the failure of proving anything beyond January 29th is your position, the appellee's position, that does simply not provide enough evidence to award temporary total disability in that period of time.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Because it was awarded up to January 29th.
That's correct. And the commission made a finding of fact that there was no evidence beyond January 29th, and therefore that should not be reversed.
Is that an issue of staleness? Is that what this comes down to?
No, it's an issue that there's no medical evidence presented. It's his burden of proof. And the last medical evidence was January 29th, which was 7 months before the hearing. If you notice that January 29th note, it indicates that the doctor wants him to come back in 2 months, which would have been, again, at least one more visit closer to the hearing date, and there's no evidence that the claimant ever went back to the doctor.
You mentioned burden of proof, and Commissioner Marshall makes a somewhat compelling argument that it doesn't make any sense to require a claimant to run to his doctor multiple times simply to confirm what the doctor has already told him hasn't dissipated. It certainly makes no economic sense in terms of who's paying for those doctor's visits. And it does have a ring of common sense to suggest that once there has been a determination of ongoing disability within a relatively recent time period, that the burden should shift to the employer to establish that that diagnosis is no longer in effect. Why shouldn't we maybe approach this case along the lines of Commissioner Marshall's argument?
I'm not sure that Mr. Marshall's public policy argument that we need to have less people going to the doctors is really something that this court should look at. It's well established that claimants have a burden to prove disability. Again, this is not a situation
this
where
this claimant clearly did prove disability
at some point.
The question is, once you prove that disability, how soon thereafter can the employer require him to prove it again?
At the time of the hearing. The commission should be able to look at the medical evidence and say, as we sit here, the claimant has recently seen his doctor, he's established that he has ongoing disability. I mean, by your argument, you could say, well, he went to the doctor.
Not my argument, it's Commissioner Marshall's.
So by Mr. Marshall's argument, then where does it end? I mean, if he said, well, a week after the accident, he went to the doctors and he said he had this, that, and the other, and he hasn't gone back, therefore he continues to be disabled. I mean, I believe that's why the commission initially has always taken a position that it's there is no presumption of ongoing disability. Now, I mean, there may be an exception if there's a person that couldn't get to the doctor, but that's not the case in this gentleman's case. There's been no allegation. Excuse me?
Are you familiar with the Saddlemyer case?
Actually, I am not, Your Honor. Oh, okay. Then I don't feel so bad.
We think it's unpublished, but I'm not sure if it is unpublished. Which doesn't say we don't have to read it, but I just, it was not cited in the briefs, and I had not run across it in my reading.
I did not see it when I was preparing for this argument either. But again, I think the evidence that the commission adopted, you know, established that there was no disability beyond January 29th, 2013. The claimant was instructed to return to the doctor, never returned to the doctor, and the fact that no additional evidence was presented at the time of the July 2013 hearing gave sufficient grounds for the commission to find that he had not borne his burden to prove continuing disability.
We've kind of beat that one down a little bit, but you're obviously relying on the factual finding of the commission on that argument.
That's correct.
Why doesn't that same standard of review as to a factual finding by the commission address at least the first three, four of your five of your all of your crosshairs.
Your Honor, I believe the standard review on an injury by accident is a plenary review. It's a mixed question of law and fact. As to the notice, I believe that is a factual finding, and we are stuck with overcoming that very difficult burden. But as to the finding of injury by accident, it's a mixed question of law and fact, and fully reviewable on appeal. Would you like me to move into discussion about
please
that?
Please.
Again, as was pointed out earlier, the claimant must prove that the cause of injury was a sudden identifiable incident that resulted in an obvious sudden mechanical change in the body. Is our position the claimant did fail to prove this. Now, all parties agree that the claimant was working on March the 8th, and it was an extended period of work that day. The claimant and co-worker, Mr. Club, unloaded a a capacitor tester from a truck and put it away. Mr. Club was present with Mr. Smith and assisted in this process. Now, the claimant's description of what happened has changed constantly. I mean, even during the hearing, he testified at one point he had sharp pain. Another time he had testified and he had no pain until the next morning. Even assuming that he's correct about the pain occurring during the process of moving the tester, there's no evidence to support that. He did not drop the tester. He did not cry out. He continued to carry this 100-pound trunk. He did nothing that his coworker, Mr. Club, saw. He didn't say anything to Mr. Club about it. As a matter of fact, after they had completed the process, they had some sort of a mentoring session, and for 15, 20 minutes, they had a long discussion about life in general, and at no point during that discussion did Mr. Smith mention anything about an accident. Subsequent to that same evening, as Mr. Club was leaving, another coworker, Jason Pettinger, showed up, and he testified that he spoke for an extended period with Mr. Smith. Again, there was no indication from Mr. Smith that he had had an accident or anything had happened. There was no observation by either one of these workers that Mr. Smith was experiencing any sort of distress. Now, Mr. Club and Mr. Pettinger were co-workers. There was nothing was presented at the hearing that would question their credibility, and the commissioner made no finding that they were not credible, but he ignored this totally contradictory testimony.
Well, didn't he claimant testified that while he was moving this object that he felt a sharp darting pain in his low back?
At one time, Your Honor. That was his testimony at the hearing, his testimony and other medical records, and even later in the hearing transcript was somewhat modified. So, I mean, our position would have to be that there was not, that testimony was not correct and that did not occur. If in fact it was as painful as he testified at that one portion of the hearing, clearly the person that was on the other side of the trunk would have noted something. There would have been some sort of communication between the two of them, but nothing happened. They completed the process.
In order to make your point, though, you need to convince us that that is incredible. If the fact finding is supported by any credible evidence, that's sufficient. And so you're saying that the explanation offered by the claimant at this one point was incredible?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
It's incredible in view of a witness standing 3 feet away that observed nothing like what Mr. Smith testified to. So we don't believe there's any evidence to support that the accident occurred.
He did mention something about feeling, I don't know if he said the word pain, so I don't want to try to state exactly his word, but both to Chubb and Pettinger, that putting that he was not right anymore and he shouldn't have handled what he tried to handle and it was bothering him. So he did say something about an injury, although he didn't describe it perhaps as being as painful as it later.
Or a sudden incident. I mean, he may have made allusions that he was older and has just been a long day and I can't keep up with you guys anymore. That sort of thing.
He didn't reflect back on the moment in time when it
Correct.
Happened. But it's not as though he went home and never said anything at all about having something happen on the job.
Well, neither one of the eyewitnesses corroborated that story either.
They both denied he said anything.
Correct.
But in the end, frankly, the commission believed the claimant and not the worker, co-workers, and that's correct.
That's correct. Although, again, although there was no finding that they were incredible, simply they were their testimony was ignored, basically. Now, as to the prong of a sudden mechanical change in the body resulting from the specific listing, again, the claimant has conflicting stories about when his pain started in his medical records. Despite the deputy commissioner saying that the discrepancies were minor, the majority of the medicals state that the pain started the following morning on the 9th. In fact, in the claimant's own long-term disability application, on page 48 of the appendix. He specifically wrote in the application, I had pain that started on May the 9th. He did not say he had pain that started on the 8th. And if in fact he'd had the pain and experienced a sudden mechanical change in the body, he likewise would have called his supervisor, since there was testimony he had a cell phone and he knew that in the event of an accident he was to call a supervisor. If you believe claimant's own LTD application that the pain in fact didn't start until March the 9th, 2012, the day afterwards, clearly that contradicts what he said at the hearing. And if that's the case, there's no way of knowing if the pain didn't appear till March the 9th, what was the cause of the pain, and whether it, whatever caused it occurred on the 8th or the 9th. Claimant's current position that it happened moving the trunk is pure speculation on his part. He obviously has a back problem. There's no dispute to that. Claimant basically has looked back at what he did the previous day and decided that moving the trunk was the heaviest thing he did, so that must have caused his injury.
All right, you have run out of time, so we'll let you...
Well, that's good, then.
Thank you very much.
It's always worse to go the other way. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Russo, you've got about 3 minutes worth of your rebuttal remaining.
Unless your honors want to talk about anything in particular, I'd like to discuss the ongoing temporary total disability briefly. In Auto Wholesale Distributors v. Stouts, an unpublished decision from the Court of Appeals, they stated that without work forms, work status forms, claimant's testimony and supporting medical records that exhibit the claimant's pain is sufficient to prove ongoing temporary total disability. And what we have is the claimant's testimony exhibiting severe pain and debilitating pain from his low back in this incident. And that in itself, with the supporting medical records that also evidence continuing severe pain and chronic pain management, prove ongoing temporary total disability. I would argue that these restrictions can be viewed as permanent work restrictions based off of the January 10, 2013 questionnaire. And Lanning v. Virginia Department of Transportation has found that where permanent restrictions were given by a physician to an injured employee, they can be valid even when they're 2 years old.
What is the site on that?
The site.
Is it a case?
Yes, Your Honor.
Yes, it is. What is the site? Do you have the site?
Over on the table. Would you like me to get it?
Well, you can do it. You can either pass it along later, but
okay.
If you want to finish
your argument. Sure.
Time is very precious.
Sure. And in Saddlemeyer v. Credit Control Services Incorporated, the September 30th, 2014 case, the facts there were that the commission only looked at the medical records and used that to deny an ongoing temporary total disability award. But this court has said that where a witness's testimony is uncontradicted and unimpeached and is consistent with the facts in the record, then you have to rely on the claimant's testimony and the medical records. If you don't, then you're improperly evaluating the record, and that's grounds for a reversal and remand. Lastly, I'd like to address the no medical evidence past January 29, 2013. The last medical record reflected the current condition of the claimant at the hearing. You can see when you look at the medical record, we're talking about disability issues, chronic pain, low back pain, I believe it's sciatica. Yes. And the claimant testified at the hearing that, you know, by his doctor, and we don't have medical record, but, you know, as we would argue it's credible testimony, by his doctor, he's remained out of work, he's never been returned to work, and his back pain and back problems have only gotten worse. And that's the citations of 401, 402, 405. And lastly, we don't we're not asking the Court of Appeals to reweigh the evidence, because we know that you won't do that. This is a matter of finding that the commission's decision to not allow an open award of temporary total disability is simply not supported by credible evidence.
You are out of time, so we will leave it at that.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much for your argument. We